Good morning, fellow students, and welcome back to another episode of Legacy Weapon, your guide to the Legacy format. I am Jamie Keller.
I'm Drew Walton.
And we are hosted today on GatheringMagic.com. We have a very special episode for you today, and are very excited to get to it. But first, Drew, what's new with you?
I'm drunk, but...
Drew, this is a family-friendly show. You're drunk on the excitement of magic. You're
yes,
drunk on
exactly.
Life.
That's what I meant to say.
It was a legacy bottle of wine.
It probably was.
No, we do have a great episode for you today, but circle up, fam, circle up. This is a very special episode. We have a big announcement and a big change that we are really excited to bring to you. We are launching, and maybe a soft launch if you follow me on Twitter, www.legacyweapon.com.
Yay!
We are really excited. We have kind of wanted to have our own website and control our own podcast RSS feed since we started this thing up even before being with Gathering Magic, and we finally found somebody else who understood technology and had him explain it to us. It didn't take, but now I'm just clicking whatever buttons he tells me to click, and it's working pretty darn well, actually. A big shout out to Amy over at Planeswalker Guide. She and her old co-host are the folks who got me connected in there. So a big thanks to them, friends of the show. And we are really excited. Our next episode will be hosted on there. We are still setting up the new RSS feed. We should have a link down in the show notes. If you're following us and subscribed here, that's great. My understanding is that this RSS feed, this iTunes account, will not be hosting the new episodes. The new episodes will only be on our new RSS feed. You will be able to find us at legacyweapon.com. You'll also be able to find us at Card Confidants and on MTGcast. So if you're on either of those, you'll just see us. But our website, which I hear you're supposed to repeat, www.legacyweapon.com, if you want people to remember www.legacyweapon.com and then go to www.legacyweapon.com. So
www.legacyweapon.com.
All right. That said, great special episode, big announcement, big change.
Yeah.
We are not making this, though, a cop-out episode. This is a full episode. It is a part one of two episode because I'm just, you know...
So for part two, you need to come back to legacyweapon.com.
Exactly. Because only on legacyweapon.com will you find the legacyweapon.com Legacy Weapon content.
Right.
I'm just a little sneaky, clever, sadistic, or dumb, depending on how you think that whole part one, part two thing is. But we are doing a deck tech.
Yay.
Another one in our series. We are moving on to my deck of elves. So part one will be here. Part two will be on legacyweapon.com. We may have a special guest for part two. We're still working out the timing on that because of time zones and scheduling. So that may or may not happen. But if you want to know who it is, you'll have to come to some other website. I don't really know. It'll be somewhere. You can find it online. Google us. Now, you might remember that we said how for Miracles, the first deck tech we did, that there's kind of a stock list, and all Miracle decks are the same with some very minor changes. And then we talked about Maverick, Drew's deck, which has...
Doesn't have a stock list.
No, has 1,000 different lists.
Whatever you want to play,
basically. Yeah, is a green and or white and or black and a halfway decent card? Somebody's probably trying it.
Probably playing it, yeah.
Elves
is somewhere in between, probably closer to the Miracles end of that spectrum.
Closer. But the interesting thing is that with Elves, there's basically two lists right now.
Yeah.
There is the standard list that has been the go-to for 4 or 5 years, and it was pretty well solved as far as here's what the list should be, and maybe you'll change 2 or 3 cards off of it, but it's set.
Has here and there been the best deck in Legacy from time to time.
Yeah, rarely the best, but it's bounced around. It's often been in the top five. Often. It's a great deck. I love it. It's my deck. It's my soul. It's my baby. Recently, though, Julian, a guy over in Europe who has been a big recent proponent of Elves, has created a new deck, which he has called Chaos Elves, which is the new hotness and is actually what I'm building to play on Magic Online, and I'm really excited about it. They play relatively differently, though, and so this time we're going to try something new. Episode 1, we're going to talk about the base classic natural order list, which you'll hear why it's called that soon. And then in part two, we're going to go over the new hotness, which is sort of a variant, sort of plays a little differently. But today we will go into the deck that I'm more experienced with, the deck that's been around for a few years now that is tried and true, and what most people see, what maybe most people talk about, and honestly what you're most likely to see. If you're on Magic Online, if you're at your local store and somebody plays turn one elf, random elf dude, this deck we're talking about today is probably what they're running. It's more common. So, with that said, Drew, this is my deck, so I'm going to probably talk even more than I normally do. Introduce to folks, what is Elves? What is type of deck is it? What is it like?
So, Jamie and I have had an argument a couple of times about this, whether Elves is a combo deck or not. Elves is a combo deck, but it can do some other things too. It's almost entirely mono green. It has a very high creature count, like 30-ish. And it basically plays a bunch of creatures, draws a bunch of cards, makes a bunch of mana, plays a really big dude, smashes your face for somewhere between 20 and 40 trampling damage. Then has some nifty sideboard cards that leverage the creatureness aspect that are pretty solid as well.
So I've never said that it's not a combo deck, but it's... What is it primarily?
What is it primarily? You've argued that it was not. I'm pretty sure you're wrong.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm probably wrong. But the thing is, when you just say combo deck, when I hear combo, I think Splinter Twin, or I think Sneak and Show, which if you know what those are, I think of just, ooh, I happened to draw my two cards. I get to win now, right? And
it's not a two-card combo where you just like, yeah, I drew card A and I drew card B plus the mana to cast them, I win. It's a little more involved than that.
So I've heard it called a combo deck with a mid-range backup. I've heard it called a mid-range deck with a combo backup. The first one's probably more accurate. Really, what I think of it is as a synergy deck. It has two separate but synergistic combos in it. But even if you don't draw any of those combo cards, every card in here synergizes with at least five other cards in the deck. And so every game plays out differently depending on what you draw. If you draw a bunch of dudes, they interact with each other one way. If you draw dudes and spells, they interact a different way. If you draw the different dudes, it's a completely different deck. So it can play a grindy value long game.
Yeah.
It can play turbo ramp and ramp probably faster than any deck in Legacy, at least any deck that doesn't go infinite.
The mana in this deck is probably more broken than the mana in any other deck.
Yeah, at least more consistently broken.
Yeah.
There are some weird decks that can try to go infinite on turn one.
I mean, Storm is way better at making five mana on turn one than you are, but in terms of making, like, yeah, just piles of mana every turn, yeah, this is real good at that.
When we say combo, a lot of people think turn one wins. This deck literally cannot do a turn one win. The biggest play this deck can do is turn one, land, elf, pass. Turn.
Yeah.
That is the biggest turn one. Turn two play 20 creatures and swing for 70 damage.
Right.
That's possible.
But this is, as a side note also, if you're building Maverick and your buddy decides to build Elves, you should kill your buddy because Elves is like the nightmare matchup for Maverick. Because that's the thing, we're talking about it's a combo deck. Maverick can handle combo fairly well. The problem is the mid-range backup is actually really legitimately good. When Jamie and I play, I shut down the combo fairly consistently, only to lose to the mid-range a lot. So, like, as much as I say this is a combo deck, that mid-range backup is not to be discounted. It's right. It's as good as a lot of decks plan A.
So,
it's plan B.
It is a creature synergy deck. It plays only 12 non-creature spells total. It's
main board anyway.
Main board. It's very creature driven. So here, let's get into it. Let's get into the creatures and the synergies. It is an elf deck. Now, the synergies all interconnect. They all work well together. But we'll go into some of the pairings. First, we'll talk about Elvish Visionary, who is one of the best elves in the deck.
Yeah.
Did we talk about it already?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. A green and a colorless.
Green and standard, though. Everybody should know what this does.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to say green and colorless. I mean green and generic. And if anyone really cares about that, you can email Drew at mtgdrewwalton@gmail.com. And
everything's my fault.
Yeah. You can tell him about generic versus colorless.
Right.
So Elvish Visionary, colorless, green, 2 mana for a 1/1. When it enters the battlefield, draw a card. And it's an elf. That is very standard, very easy to understand. It's fine, you know.
Questionably playable and limited. I mean,
yeah. It's very playable and limited. It's sometimes seen some standard play. It's sometimes seen some modern play.
This is a totally legitimate tier 2 modern deck that plays.
Yeah. All right, so that's one of your building blocks. And like we said, turn 1 is just play an elf and go. None of these elves on their own are great. But it's the synergies.
Right.
So let's pair him with the only non-elf of your normal creatures, a card called Wirewood Symbiote, the other best elf in the deck, even though it's not an elf. It is actually an insect. It is 1 green mana for a 1/1, and it has the same ability that we talked about in Maverick on the what's it called? The flying thing.
No, that's Scrib Ranger, but it's a copy of Quirion Ranger. Close, though.
Similar idea. So anyway, Aquarian Ranger has a similar ability. Wirewood Symbiote, its ability is to return an elf you control to its owner's hand. That's the cost of the ability.
Yeah.
And the effect is untap target creature, and you can play this ability only once each turn. So that sounds terrible. I remember seeing it and thinking it was unplayable because, you know, okay, untapping a creature is nice, but you only get to do it once per turn, so you can't really go infinite or abuse it. And you have to return a creature to your hand. I mean, best case scenario, you untap somebody who makes mana, but then you have to replay the elf.
The dude you already played, yeah.
Well.
And, well, when did they print this? Like, Tempest? At the time, it probably was unplayable.
It was. There was no real reason to play it at the time, I don't think. It was in
Stronghold?
No, it was after that, but around that time period.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble remembering right now the set, but it was
anyway.
It's old. The thing is, though, if you're bouncing back your Elvish Visionary and play it again, now you've drawn an extra card. And you can use it once per turn. So on turn 1, or on specific turn, you play your Elvish Visionary, draw a card, bounce it to hand with the Wirewood Symbiote to untap a mana elf, play your Elvish Visionary again, draw a second card. You've now drawn 3 cards this turn. On your opponent's turn, bounce the Elvish Visionary to your hand on their turn. On your turn, you can play it again, and bounce it again, and play it again. You're now drawing 3 cards per turn. If this sounds slow and dirtily, it sort of is. If it sounds mana intensive, it sort of is. I mean, 2 mana drawing cards, good. But
this deck makes enough mana that that's not really the problem.
Yes, we'll get into kind of how you make that mana easily later. But you can just see how that's really valuable. And just like the trick that Maverick had where you could bounce your Dryad Arbor, your forest creature, as a blocker, this could be the same thing. They attack with their big lifelinky guy. Well, you block with your Elvish Visionary, bounce it in response.
Yep.
Or bounce it in response to a lightning bolt that would kill your Elvish Visionary or something. You can often bounce it and have the bouncing be a value itself, even before the untap, even before the replaying. So it's whenever you can take a downside and turn it into a huge upside, you've got a winner. So they're the best buddies. That's one synergy. Another synergy. We have a pair of cards, kind of a big brother, little brother thing going on, of Heritage Druid and Birchlore Rangers. Heritage Druid is a 1/1 elf for 1 who says, tap 3 untapped elves you control, add green, green, green to your mana pool. Fine. You know, I'm sure it was standard playable, or at least, you know, it was fine. It was back in Lorwyn, tribal was a thing. It turns all of your elves into Llanowar elves, or into Elvish Mystics or whatever. Fine. Doesn't seem all that special, but beyond the fact that it makes them all make mana, it also makes them all have effectively haste.
Yep.
There's no tap signal here. If I play Heritage Druid, Heritage Druid, Heritage Druid on the same turn with 3 mana, I can then tap all 3 of them to play 3 more elves. then I can tap all three of those to make three more mana to do something else. So bear with me. That's great. You know, if you keep playing them, you can keep tapping them the turn you play them. Wonderful.
Of course, you probably will run out of cards in your hand.
Put a pin in that idea.
Yeah.
Also, you know, you can only tap them once, so they're not going to make that much mana. Put a pin in that one, too. So
yeah.
Heritage Druids come to the big brother. It's usually a four of. The little brother is Birchlore Rangers. It's a 1-1 for one that has tap two untapped elves you control to add one mana of any color to your mana pool.
It also has morph.
It also has morph. Morph for just one green. So why would you ever morph it when the morph cost is the same as the playing cost? Well, there's some strange value to be gotten out of that because it is then a 2-2.
It's colorless. This is the big thing, is that every other creature in your deck is green.
Yes.
And there exist a couple of playable protection from green creatures.
Yes.
So
there are times where having protection from green is the only way that they can get through.
Especially because you've got Wirewood Symbiote there, and they're just going to block all of their creatures, and it's a 1-1, but you'll never actually kill it.
So that there are some times where having a colorless creature is wonderful. And there's other times when just having it be a 2-2 instead of a 1-1 is enough.
Also relevant.
Yes. As we said, mid-range beatdown is part of the plan for this deck. I play it morphed. It's the only morph card I've ever seen in Legacy, but
yeah.
I probably play it morphed once out of every maybe six matches.
Yeah.
You know, usually it doesn't change the game when I do it, but it's, you know, survives a one damage thing like a lot of these cards don't. So it's really good sometimes for that. Also, we've talked about Chalice of the Void, things that stop one mana creatures. Well, you can play it morph for three mana, and that's a way to get around that.
That's true, too.
A weird little thing that seems useless but comes in handy a lot more than you think. Getting back to the main synergy ability, though, tap two untapped elves you control, add one mana of any color to your mana pool. Less efficient than Heritage Druid, because you're only getting like half a mana per elf, but it's any color, which even though we're mono green, we have uses for other colors sometimes.
Yeah, especially after sideboarding.
Exactly. And sometimes you only have two elves. A lot of the good turn two wins include a Birchlore Rangers, because then you play an elf, you play a second elf, and you can right then start making mana off of them.
Yeah.
Instead of having to use a third mana to get a third elf and go off that way.
Right.
So it very, very useful. And nice to have some of both. Those are usually only a two of. So those two are great. And you now want elves that are able to tap a lot. Enter into their buddy, the big synergy here, Nettle Sentinel. Nettle Sentinel is a 2-2 elf for one mana. So there must be a downside. Well, the downside is that he doesn't untap during your untap step. So kind of a big downside, just for a 2-2 beater. The way you get around that is that each time you play a green spell, he untaps. That was intended as kind of a fair downside, where, fine, it's a 2-2 for one mana, but the cost is you have to keep playing spells.
Right.
Kind of like the reverse of the werewolves that are in Standard right now, where you have to like skip playing spells. This one, you have to remember to play a spell every turn to get it to untap. Otherwise, he stays tapped. So, all right, fair trade-off. Well, when your deck's A, full of only green spells, and B, you have something that lets him tap for mana even when he has Summoning Sickness.
Yeah.
Ooh, the value is so good.
Right. Plus you have tons and tons of one drops. I mean, it's just not hard to be casting a spell every turn.
So it is not the ideal opening is not, you know, Nettle Sentinel beat down, but I've definitely played, okay, turn one, Nettle Sentinel. Turn two, attack with Nettle Sentinel, play another Nettle Sentinel, untap him. All right, well, we're on Nettle Sentinel beatdown this game.
It happens.
That's not the most efficient game plan, but if that's what you're mulliganing down to, I've won many games by doing Nettle Sentinel beatdown.
Yeah.
And in case the synergy isn't completely obvious, say you play Nettle Sentinel, and then you play Birchlore Rangers. Tap them both and play Random Elf X. That untaps the Nettle Sentinel. Now tap the Nettle Sentinel and the new guy for one mana, and play Elf Y. That untaps the Nettle Sentinel. Tap him and him. Now another elf. So now for free, you've played four cards out of your hand.
Yep.
Now, that would be great, except eventually you're going to run out of cards in your hand, and then what will you do?
I don't know. What will you do?
Well, we'll find out in a minute.
Yeah.
So another great synergy. Another card that goes in here with just synergizing with everything is our good buddy Deathrite Shaman.
Yep.
Which I think we mentioned last time. This is the accursed card.
Yeah.
Every podcast we have ever mentioned Deathrite Shaman in has had to be re-recorded
at least
twice.
Once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is re-record number two.
Yeah.
It's important to actually push the record button, and now we know
apparently.
That. It's good to do. So
one of us may have forgotten to do this last time.
Someone who shall not be named.
Well, and then there was a backup that failed.
True, the backup failed.
So yeah, anyway, Deathrite Shaman.
The other best elf in the deck.
Right.
The one mana planeswalker, he is part of the reason why you want Birchlore Ranger's main, because he uses black mana. And it's sometimes really useful to just be able to tap random dudes to make the black mana to activate Deathrite Shaman, even if you don't have the land for it. We'll get into the lands in a minute. There's some swamps in the deck, but Deathrite Shaman is just so good.
Yeah.
Everything we've said before is true here, except, as we said, Wirewood Symbiote cannot tap him, so he can be used more than once per turn.
Yep.
He can then take out more than one thing in a graveyard. He can try to take something out of a graveyard, and if they try to do shenanigans, untap him and do it again to
yep.
trump them.
Right.
Deathrite Shaman usually gets killed really quickly, so Wirewood Symbiote can save him by returning him to your hand. Basically, everything he does good in Maverick, he does slightly better here, is basically the takedown. Is that fair?
I mean,
he has more synergies here, so he does the same things, but can just do them twice per turn.
Maverick probably benefits more from his ability to just be a mana dork.
Okay, true.
And Maverick probably benefits more from his ability to make mana of any color.
Mm-hmm.
And might honestly benefit more from the ability to just close games by sucking two life out of your opponent. Because
maybe.
Maverick is probably a little bit better at playing control than elves.
But so
just the fact that he happens to be an elf, I mean, there's just so much elf synergy. I mean, yeah.
True. Since I've got Birchlore Rangers and I've got Heritage Druids, him tapping for one mana is not as important, because often I can do that already.
Right.
But I will say, a turn one Deathrite Shaman's often the best turn one play that you can possibly do with this deck. Not always, but often. It's the most reliable.
It's always the best turn one play in Maverick, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the dude just happens to be the best creature ever printed, so he's probably the best card in every deck that has him in it. It's just that's how it works. When you're the best, well, you're the best in every deck that you're in.
I love this guy so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one important thing to note also, say you've got only forests in this guy, and you and your opponent's about to do something crazy with his instants and sorceries in his graveyard. Well, if you've got a Wirewood Symbiote, all right, so tap the Deathrite Shaman to make black mana. Use the Wirewood Symbiote, bounce random other guy to untap Deathrite Shaman, and you can use his own mana to then activate him a second time.
Yeah.
Or if you've got lots of black mana, you can activate him to deal two, or to make them lose two life, and then untap him, and then activate him again to make them lose two life again, and then do it again on their turn, since you can do Wirewood Symbiote once on your turn and once on your opponent's turn.
Yep.
Oh, the synergies are so good. It's just so relentless. Such value. The value drips like juices off of a hog.
Delicious.
I might be wishing I were watching Game of Thrones right now. You'll have to forgive me.
Yeah. It's Sunday night. That's what happens.
So the last elf in the deck, at least in this list, which we'll link this list is from Ross Merriam, who was the big like flag bearer for elves for a long, long time, is Quirion Ranger, which I awkwardly alluded to earlier. Quirion Ranger is a lot like the weird flying guy that Drew has in his deck. What's his name?
Scrib Ranger.
Scrib Ranger was a homage to Quirion Ranger. Quirion Ranger is a 1/1 elf for one green mana, with the ability of return a force you control to its owner's hand. The effect of this ability is untap target creature. Use this ability only once per turn.
Yeah. A lot like Wirewood Symbiote, easy to confuse the two. I definitely do. Sometimes I've tried to kill the wrong one. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's usually against me that you do that.
Yes. Yes.
So this is good for all the same reasons that he talked about. Spoiler, Dryad Arbor's in this deck. It makes perfect sense. You know, it's not an elf, but it has so many synergies with Quarian Ranger in particular.
Yeah.
Everything that we said before you can do with Dryad Arbor. You can untap a creature. You can bounce the one creature after it blocks. You can, if you really need to make a lot of mana, okay, use Quarian Ranger to bounce not even Dryad Arbor, just a normal forest to your hand. All right. Then replay that forest and tap it again. If you have, if you don't have an extra land in hand, okay, so there's one extra mana. You untapped a mana dork. There's another mana. Bounce the Quarian Ranger using a Wirewood Symbiote to use to untap the mana dork again. Great, there's another mana.
Or even if you don't have like Bursalar Rangers or Heritage Druid, if you have a Dryad Arbor, you can be untapping the Dryad Arbor here, which
Good. Just mean Dryad Arbor is wonderful to have in play, if only for the fact that you can untap it as a creature or can bounce it as a forest. And just being able to do double duty there. So the nice thing though is if you bounce Quarian Ranger and replay it in the same turn, you can use its ability a second time that turn because it is not the same, in quotation marks, Quarian Ranger.
Right.
Its question, have I activated this yet this turn, gets reset anytime it leaves the battlefield.
Right.
So I have definitely used Quarian Ranger twice per turn by using a Wirewood Symbiote in the middle. I think I've done it more than once, actually. I think I've done it three times in a turn by having multiple symbiotes. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
You hear me talking about all these synergies. And they're great. And it all sounds like you need a lot of stuff in play. Well, the nice thing is pick any two of these and they work well together. Almost without exception. So if you've got two creatures in your opening hand, it's just a question of what kind of synergy do you have. Some are stronger. You know, the best two-card combo in the deck is Elvish Visionary and Wirewood Symbiote. But if you don't have those and you've got a Heritage Druid, all right, well, now you're just going to run combo mana ramp this game. You've got a Nettle Sentinel. Well, you've got Beatdown and Mana Ramp. Whatever your opening hand is will tell you what kind of a deck you're going to be this turn. So let's get into the spells, because we all sort of always seem to talk about it like we're going to have four or five creatures in hand and four or five creatures on the battlefield. And of course that wouldn't happen in Legacy, except when it does, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
So the first spell is a Green Sun Zenith, which is
we've talked about before.
It's great for all the reasons that it is great in Maverick. It finds you whatever you need. Unlike there, where it's usually finding the hate bear you need, the silver bullet, here it's usually finding the synergy piece you need.
Right.
Honestly, the things I search for most often with that are probably Wirewood Symbiote or Elvish Visionary.
Yep.
Just to get that value engine going. Or Dryad Arbor. Just if I need a turn one mana dork, you play Green Sun Zenith 4/1 for 0, X equals 0, and go get yourself a Dryad Arbor on turn one.
Yep. The other thing that this does is it allows you to play green creatures in your sideboard, green hate creatures in your sideboard, and one copy in your sideboard will now – you'll have five copies of that post-board because now you're all your Green Sun Zeniths represent that card. And so it makes your deck really good after sideboarding, which is just a nifty bonus to a card that's already really good before sideboarding.
Right. So. The next card, which is pretty – I think exclusively used in elves, is a card called Glimpse of Nature. Glimpse of Nature is a used to be a junk rare, which I wish I'd gotten my copies back when it was a junk rare. Glimpse of Nature, one green mana, sorcery. Until end of turn, whenever you play a creature spell, draw a card.
Yeah.
Note first, you have to play the creature spell. Putting a Dryad Arbor into play from your hand doesn't count. Green Sun Zenith thing for somebody doesn't count.
Right.
But also, if they counter the spell, if they counter the creature, you still get to draw the card. Right. Good to note, just off the bat. The other thing to note is that will probably never happen, because if they have a counter spell, they're probably
countering the glimpse.
Yes. So Glimpse of Nature is how you keep your hand full.
Yeah.
Here's how it plays out. You play a Glimpse of Nature. If it resolves, you play a creature. You draw a card. You play a second creature, you draw a card. You've now probably drawn a creature because half your deck is creatures.
Yep.
Also, the creatures you just played either drew you more cards, untap your other creatures, or tap them for mana themselves, probably at hasty speed. So you tap them for mana, and cast another creature, which draws you another card. Which then
at
will
this point, you probably have a Nettle Sentinel, and so
right, now so the Nettle Sentinel.
You're frequently at least neutral on mana every time you play a one drop.
Exactly. If you have a Nettle Sentinel and a Birchlore Rangers, then you are able to just keep putting them out and making one mana for every one mana spell that you cast, pretty much. So you are net neutral. If you have a Heritage Druid out, you're making mana every turn. If you've got two Nettle Sentinels out, you're making mana. Not every turn, every card you cast.
Every card you cast, right.
So it snowballs. And it can fizzle. But when I say fizzle, I mean, oh, I only drew five cards off of it until I ran out of creatures to play. Oops.
Sometimes you only draw one or two. But even then, like, blue decks are totally happy to play what is effectively one mana, draw one card.
Right.
This is so much better than that.
Exactly. You know, if this card draws you two cards, you're disappointed. And that's still pretty darn good. If
one mana, draw two cards is totally busted.
Yeah, that would probably be banned if there was just a one mana draw two cards.
Yes.
This makes you jump through hoops, obviously, but
it's still really, really, really powerful.
Right.
And that's the worst case scenario. The best case scenario is something like draw 10, draw 20, and win.
Right. And beyond the fact that it draws you cards, if you're playing this deck and you've even started to go off, every card you draw, A, draws you another card, and B, makes you more mana. So the spells even synergize with these creatures. Oh, the value. Oh,
it's so much value. It's glorious.
And this is the thing. It is a dirtly deck. Almost the definition of dirtling.
Yes.
But all this dirtling you're doing is to make more actual guys. You're not just like doing 55 activations to scry one. You're doing like two things to draw and play a card out of your deck. And then you just have the ability to keep doing those two things over and over and over again until you have 30 creatures in play.
Right.
And if you attack with 31 ones, it doesn't really feel like a weenie deck anymore. And that just feels like you win the game.
Right. Because that's usually what happens when you attack with 31 ones.
So, if somebody plays Glimpse of Nature, two things. Because we're not just interested in teaching how to play the deck. We also want to teach you how to play against the deck. If somebody plays a Glimpse of Nature, probably you want to counter that Glimpse of Nature. Because, you know, they're not going to play it if they have no creatures in hand. And they're probably going to play it when they think they can go off and win the game. Even if you're countering it when it's a value glimpse, as I sometimes call it, where you're, I'm just going to play it, play one or two creatures, and then fine. I needed to get out of my hand and do something.
It's still probably worth a counterspell.
That's still okay, yeah. Now that said, look at what mana they have. I've definitely had, maybe three mana on the field. I play Glimpse of Nature, and they cast Days against me.
Right.
And I look down at my field and I look at them and I get a little confused. And I, pay the extra one mana for Days. All right, fine. I had it on the field. That was easy. And then I looked down at my hand and I realized, oh, wait, crap. Now I only have one mana.
The only card I have in my hand is an Elvish Visionary.
Yeah. So now the glimpse does nothing. All right, well, you effectively did counter it. Now, to be honest, if my only card in hand is an Elvish Visionary, I won't pay the one. I'll let the glimpse get countered.
Even though I could
pay for it, just because you need that mana up front. This deck snowballs, but like every snowball, you need to start with a tiny little insignificant pebble of like two mana.
Yeah.
And then those two mana will turn into the giant snowball that murders your opponent with painful death and probably an avalanche of collateral damage.
Right.
Let's talk about that avalanche of collateral damage. The last spell in the deck pairs with the last creature in the deck that we haven't talked about. The spell is called Natural Order. Four mana, sorcery, search your deck. Let's get the Gatherer ruling on this one, because the words have changed. So I want to read the exact current Gatherer for this. Natural.
As an additional cost playing Natural Order, sacrifice a creature. Search your library for a creature card and put that card onto the battlefield, I believe.
Yes. All right. So once again, Drew carries the show. I awkwardly say the things that I'm currently typing on my computer, as if that will help me type faster. So, Natural Order. You sack a creature and you get any creature you want that's green out of your library.
Does have to be a green creature, yes. Good call.
So, that sounds fine. I mean, you're paying four, you're using a card, you're using a creature in play, you're getting something out of your library. Well, that would seem almost fair if it wasn't for the fact that you can get anything. And anything usually means a really big creature.
Right.
As much as this deck can make a lot of mana, it is a lot easier to make four mana than to make eight mana.
Yes.
So if I can cast Natural Order for four mana, sacrifice a Birchlore Rangers that I played on turn one, and fetch up an eight mana creature, well, that's some pretty good value.
It'd be even better if they had printed an eight mana creature that effectively, in a deck like this, just said, when this enters the battlefield, win the game.
I would love it if that existed. I would love it if it were called Craterhoof Behemoth, and I would love it if I have it pulled up on my computer in front of me.
Right.
Have I mentioned I'm loving life as we talk about this deck?
Yeah, right.
I'm so happy. Yeah. Craterhoof Behemoth, eight mana. Five, green, green, green. It is a 5/5 with haste. It's one of like three green creatures with haste. It's got haste. Don't question it. It's a
it just beast. Does. Never mind.
It's a 5/5 beast with haste.
It is a beast.
Yeah, it is. When it enters the battlefield, it has an enter the battlefield effect. Creatures you control, including Craterhoof Behemoth, gain trample until end of turn, and get plus X until end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control. This includes Craterhoof Behemoth. So, if you play him on an empty board, or if you sacrifice your only creature to natural order him out, then you get a 6/6 trample haste. I mean, that is good, and, you know, you might win the game just attacking for 5 every turn. I've seen it happen, but that's really subpar. That's not like a legacy thing to do with,
no.
You know, a 4-mana spell or an 8-mana spell. If you have him and another creature, well, now they each get +2/+2, and now you're attacking for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Now you're attacking for 10 trample damage.
Okay. That's pretty solid.
You get a third one out, and now you're attacking for 14 trample damage. Am I getting that right?
Yeah.
16 damage if you have three of them.
So right around four creatures attacking is where you start to look at lethal.
Lethal regardless of their blockers. If you have him and two creatures, that might be lethal depending on how many lands they've fetched or if they've done anything else, or if you hit them with a Nettle Sentinel on turn one or two.
Right.
Like, as much as most games that I play end with, I run over your face with a Craterhoof Behemoth, sometimes that's after a Glimpse Chain when I've got 20 creatures in play.
Right. And that's so what usually happens 20/20. Is that really, like, it's only one or two creatures actually attacking, but there are like six to ten other creatures with summoning sickness on the board. And so it's only one or two creatures attacking, but they're getting like +10/+10.
Yeah. Oh, the value. The value.
Yeah. Like it. Yeah. Two or three creatures attacking, but it's like somewhere between 20 and 30 trample damage.
This is a really interesting thing, and almost getting into the strategy gameplay. It is important and hard to remember which things have summoning sickness and which don't. Yeah. Since you're usually able to tap all of them for mana with your Heritage Druids and your Birchlore Rangers. I will actually, when I'm playing, put all the ones that have summoning sickness on a separate side of the battlefield just to keep them physically separate so that I can remember. Because otherwise, I won't know who I can attack with, and I won't know which ones I need to try to untap. A lot of the time, the difference between lethal and non-lethal is how many of the things that you started the turn with you're able to get around to untapping at the end.
Whether you have a Wirewood Symbiote or a Quirion Ranger with an unused untap ability, so you can untap one more dude. So that guy can swing for 12 because you have, 11 creatures on the battlefield.
That happens frequently. Yeah. So that's the deck. That's what it's trying to do. It's trying to beat face with 1/1s and 2/2s if that is a legit path to victory, which it sometimes is. That's the backup. Yeah. Flood the board with 20 creatures on one turn and then beat face with 21/1s, which is a very legit path to victory. Or just play Craterhoof Behemoth, which, you can natural order him. Or you can just hard cast him from your hand.
Or you can Greenstone Zenith if you can make 9 mana.
How would we possibly make that much mana in addition to all this other stuff? Because I don't think we've talked about enough ways to make mana, do you?
Not nearly. Yeah, we haven't talked about the lands yet.
Let's talk about some lands.
Yeah.
So you start off with two forests and with fetch lands. So usually 10 fetch lands as base. Mine has 9, honestly, because I just don't own two Verdant Catacombs.
Yeah.
The Zendikar fetch lands are really expensive. The Khan fetches are starting to go up. If you don't have your Khan's fetches yet,
now is probably a good time to buy.
You should really go get them now. Get your four of each. Get your playset. Just lock them away. You'll be glad you did.
The thing for this deck, it does not matter which fetches you have as long as they are green.
Exactly.
Because there are only, six fetch targets, and they are all forests.
Exactly. That's right. So you've got the two Dryad Arbors. We talked about those. You've got two forests. Basic this forests. Deck yeah. survives Wastelands fine. It survives Land Destruction fine.
Which most monocolor decks do, which is...
Yeah. Right. But it only does that if you can, get to two or three mana first.
Yeah.
Like every creature ramp deck, you need to get the ball going. So if you play, say, turn one, fetch land into Bayou, which is your other land, because as we said, you sometimes need black mana.
Yeah.
And they go wasteland, kill your Bayou, you might be looking at your hand and realize, I don't have any other ones.
Yeah. So, or I've only got one mana next turn, and it'll slow you down.
Exactly. You cannot go off with just one mana. The whole thing where you can't win on turn one, if they kill your land, you can't win on turn two.
Yeah.
So if you open up with a fetch land, turn one, go get a forest. I don't care if your opening is Deathrite Shaman. I don't care if your opening hand is four Deathrite Shamans. Go get a forest every single time.
Yeah.
Now, that said, I've had games that I've opened up with Fetchland into Dryad Arbor. I'll talk about why in a minute. You're never happy if you do that. You need a land that comes into play untapped and a land that makes mana on turn one. So the odd reason you do that and the reason why you can play all these big mana spells is the last land, Gaia's Cradle.
Yeah.
Did you just hear angels sing? I just heard angels sing. There were chimes and harps.
This is one of those cards that just, if it were good in any deck other than Elves, it would probably have to be banned. Because it's just so stupid powerful.
Okay, so what Gaia's Cradle is, it is a legendary land that says, tap. Add green to your mana pool for each creature you control.
Yeah.
Full stop. So that sounds good. It's far better than good. It is.
I don't know. It sounds stupid broken to me, but
so
because I've lost a lot of games to Elves already in my life.
So the big downside is that you play it on turn one and it doesn't do anything.
Yeah,
it makes zero mana on turn one. It makes zero mana after they kill all your creatures. If they have a Wrath of God type effect, they kill all your creatures. Now, Gaia's Cradle does nothing. It's also downside is it's a legendary land. It's a little bit painful to play four of them because you can't have two in play at once. It used to be that if you had one in play and you played a second one, they would both die.
Yeah.
This deck got infinitely better and people started playing it as a four of when they changed the legendary rule. Now, if you play a second one, you get to pick one of them to keep and one to sacrifice.
Yeah.
Which means in a turn, you can tap your Gaia's Cradle. Play the second one.
Pick. Yeah, you leave the untapped one.
Right. And then basically get two Gaia's Cradle activations at the same turn. If you've got two creatures in play and you play Gaia's Cradle and you tap it made two mana. Fine. That's good.
That's very, very, very good.
A land that makes two mana for no pain is very good.
It's already already better than every other land that's available in Legacy. But
you probably aren't even doing that though. You're probably tapping it for five on average.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes for 20.
Sometimes.
But five,
you probably are like a good game when you tap for 20, but yeah, five is
four. I'd say four is probably the average, but that's because you're usually using it to get your combo to explode. And afterwards you don't need your lands to make mana anymore.
Right.
It is so beautiful. It is so broken. And it's a lot like a banned card, Tolarian Academy, which I can't remember. We talked about that, didn't we?
No, that's the banned card of the day for today.
Oh.
Well, remembering we talked about that in the episode that we had to ditch because of Deathrite Shaman problems.
In the episode that shall not be named due to the cursed card, Deathrite Shaman. Now feels like a good time. Do you have a banned card of the day you'd love to talk about?
I do. Good. Your intuition is amazing.
Speaking of segues... That was the sound of me driving a Segway up and then falling over.
Ah, okay. So the banned card of the day is Tolarian Academy, which is from there's a cycle of cards in Urza's Saga, one of the most broken sets of all time. And the green one was Gaia's Cradle. The blue one is Tolarian Academy, which is also a legendary land. And it has an ability that says tap, add one blue mana to your mana pool for each artifact you control. But the reason this is broken is that there exists an awful lot of zero mana artifacts. And while Gaia's Cradle will, as we said, sometimes tap for 4, 5, 20 mana, it won't do that until at least turn 2. And really, it won't really do the broken stuff of tapping for like 5 plus mana until turn 3, probably. You're not really tapping this for 5 mana on the second turn. You can totally tap Tolarian Academy for 3 blue mana on turn 1. And that's really not okay, because that's the kind of thing that just wins games before your opponent gets a draw step.
Right. I've heard them talk about kind of why the one is banned and the other isn't. And they said, you know, the fact that on turn 4, Tolarian Academy can make you 10 mana and Gaia's Cradle can make you 30 mana on turn 4, exaggerating a little bit on both.
Tolarian Academy really is not almost ever tapping for more than like 5, but yeah.
Right. They don't care as much how big you can get by turn 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
They care what you're doing in turn 1 and 2. And Gaia's Cradle right. is doing nothing on turn 1 and usually tapping for 2 on turn 2.
Which is good, but right. If it taps for 2 on turn 2 but 0 on turn 1, it's totally reasonable.
Right. Tolarian Academy tapping for 3 on turn 1 and 5 on turn 2.
That's really not okay, because that's what happens. This is how it's banned in Legacy, obviously. It gets played in the Vintage Storm decks, and this is what it does.
It's restricted in Vintage.
It's restricted in Vintage, yeah, because even there, it's still kind of a problem.
Well, more there, because they've got Moxen and everything.
Well, so right,
they've got,
yeah.
They've actually got good zero-mana artifacts there.
Yeah.
Here, you'd have to play some not-good artifacts, but it's still fine. That's still fine.
You could play Lotus Petals and Mox Opals and Lion's Eye Diamonds, and I'm pretty sure that's good enough.
You would turn your Ornithopters into Mox Sapphires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It exactly. turns your bad ones into good ones. Anyway, there was a joke that's not really a joke, that the most powerful deck in the history of Magic was the standard legal decks from this era before they banned this card, because they were just so broken. It was called Combo Winter, because every deck was combo or lost.
Yeah,
most games were over on turn one. The joke was that the early game, you know, early, mid, and late game. Early game was shuffling, mid game was mulliganing, and late game was turn one. Like if you got to turn one, except that's
right.
not really.
Yeah, if you lost the die roll, you might not actually get to play your first turn. But
we joke, but it's serious. Stay off the smack, kids. Stay away from. If anyone ever says, "Hey, let's play Urza's Saga block constructed," don't be friends with that person. They're leading you down a primrose path of doom. It's terrible.
Well, I think you needed it wasn't just Urza block, because I think you needed Tempest for the Lotus Petals, and there were a couple other things.
Don't do it.
But anyway, don't do it. It's bad. It won't be any fun.
It's a bad person.
They probably are a bad person. Yeah.
All right, so that's the main deck. We want to get into the sideboard real quick, because as I said, for day two, we want to talk about the new hotness and also more on how to play this. We'll get into more strategy then as well. I feel like I've done a terrible job of explaining this, just because the deck, on the one hand, everything it does is so simple. There's no instance at all. In the main board. It's all sorceries and onboard tricks, just stuff sitting there on the battlefield, interacting with each other in very clearly written ways. So it sounds so simple. So when I say something, I feel like I'm repeating myself. But I also feel like I'm making it sound like a terribly complicated hedge maze of thorns and elves.
It is. It's a deck that takes a lot of practice to be good at. It takes a lot of practice of playing against to get good at. I mean, this is probably the deck that I've played more games against out of all the Legacy decks that exist.
It's because I play it all the time.
Because this is the only deck that Jamie plays anymore. And nonetheless, I mean, it's been fairly recently, I think, that I've finally gotten a handle on what this deck is actually doing all of the time. Because there's so many of these things. Like, yeah, it's like it's just onboard tricks, but really, like, no.
It fires on all cylinders.
Even when you've seen this deck so many times before, you still miss the tricks. It's very tricky.
The reason I love the deck is it never gets boring to me. Maybe for some people it would, but never for me. Because some games you're playing just creatures and just interacting the creatures with each other and their activated abilities against each other. Some games you're going Glimpse of Nature and trying to almost use math to maximize how much mana you can make. And some games,
like a storm deck,
like a storm deck. And then some games I just was talking today with somebody who basically said he thinks this is more complicated than Storm. I don't think that's really true, but he said so maybe it is.
Maybe, I don't know.
Some games it's almost a dumb combo deck of get to 4 mana, play natural order, win the game. Yep. Some games, you know, just whatever happens to come out. I also love this, and I love it for new players, actually, as much as it is complicated, because the floor is pretty high. You know, if you miss triggers, if you miss synergies, your baseline is still beating down with dudes, making a lot of mana, and you've got an instant win card in there if you have the board state for it. So the floor on it, even if you don't really know what you're doing, you'll still win some games sometimes.
Yeah.
Step one is kind of figuring out how to maximize your mana, like how to use enough things to not give away mana on a turn when you need it. You know, step two is kind of trying to figure out how best to use the onboard tricks. Step three is like, okay, when do I use a glimpse of mana just to draw two cards versus hold it to do the big things? Then like step four is, okay, how do I play around my opponents? Like I think my opponent has a force of will. How do I draw that out on a creature who's good enough to counter, but that I don't need so that I can play my natural order next turn? And, you know, you just keep climbing that mountain and you can feel yourself getting better at it. You can feel yourself kind of figuring these strategies out. I make mistakes all the time, but you can feel yourself getting better, which I think is really valuable for folks, especially if they're learning, to be able to see that improvement and know where they're going.
Sideboard.
So, let's see. We've got Thoughtseize.
Yep.
Which we've talked, have we talked about?
We must have talked about that in Maverick.
Okay. Yes. So discard. That comes in against.
How many of those are you running?
I'm running in this deck 2 Thoughtseizes and 4 Cabal Therapies. Mm-hmm. Cabal Therapy is a related card. I don't think we've talked about that one yet.
I don't think we have.
It is 1 black mana for sorcery. Name a non-land card. Target player reveals their hand and discards all cards with that name.
Yeah.
So this might be
the most skill-intensive card in Magic.
Yes. And honestly, which one of these cards I play 4 of and which I play 2 of depends a little bit on how familiar I am with the current meta, or how much attention I've been paying, or how, like, just really on my game I am. The easy card to play, easy in quotes, is Thoughtseize, because you get to look at their hand and make a decision. Cabal Therapy, you have to name something outright. Now, this card deserves an entire episode to itself. There have been articles written on just this card. There's really 2 ways to play it. One is, what cards do I think they probably have? You know, you play this on turn 1, well, you know, what cards would a person keep in an opening hand? We talked about how good in Miracles it is to have a Brainstorm in your opening hand, or a Force of Will, or a Sensei's Divining Top. So, okay, name one of those that you think they probably have in their opener to have made them keep their 7-card opening hand.
Right.
The other way is, what card do I want to make sure they don't have, so that if I'm right, they discard their Force of Wills, and now they don't have Force of Wills, and I can win the game? And if I'm wrong, well, that's fine, because now I know that they don't have Force of Wills, and I still get to win the game.
If your opponent is tapped out, probably the only way they have of stopping a combo, especially say you like Natural Order will win you the game, you have 5 mana open. So if they've got a daze, doesn't matter, you can fight through that. Pretty much the only other 0 mana counterspell that they're likely to be playing is Force of Will. So if you play this, naming Force of Will, either you make them pitch it, or they didn't have it in the first place, you win either way.
Right. So it's a real guessing game. And you might say, well, why would you want to play this instead of Thoughtseize? Well, the 2 upsides, 3 upsides. 1, you don't lose any life. Whatever. It's good. You know, you'll lose 2 damage is not nothing, as we've said.
Yeah.
You get to make them discard as many as they have. You know, I've caught 2 Brainstorms in their opening hand off of this sometimes. Yep. So that's great. And the other side is that this card has Flashback.
Yeah.
Flashback means you can cast it out of your graveyard. So if you play it and they don't have the card you're looking for, you now have seen their hand and you can play it from your graveyard right away and name something that you just saw. The cost of Flashback is no mana. It is sacrifice a creature.
Yeah.
So
I wonder Yeah. Seems pretty good in a deck that makes tons and tons of creatures.
Right. On one hand, this deck has lots and lots of creatures. If you're already comboing off and you're worried about something that might stop you, this is an easy cost to pay because you've got lots of creatures. It's actually more painful than you'd think, like on turn two or three if you haven't comboed off, because you know, you need that starting snowball. You need those right. creatures. And I think we talked actually on our talk about who's the beatdown at the time when I guessed wrong on this, when I had this in my graveyard and I knew he had his combo card in hand, but I thought that I was the beatdown and I thought I needed my creatures to snowball and it would be fine. And it was debatably not a terrible decision, but it turned out to be the wrong one and I should not have made it because it's really good to get rid of your opponent's best card.
Yeah.
So anyway, you usually have six discard spells because this is a combo deck. This deck can win on turn two. Usually wins on deck usually wins on turn three or four. You know, if the game goes to turn six, seven, eight, ten, you know, you can win with all that combo and value and everything. But you're not a fast combo. You're not a turn one or two combo. You're a turn three combo.
Right.
So if you play against a turn one or turn two combo, you don't really have any defenses against them. You don't have counterspells. You don't have
in the main. Right. Right. So your defenses are these sideboards.
Well, you still don't have counterspells even in the sideboard. Well, you're a green deck.
Yeah. Right.
So this is your way to stop turn one, turn two win decks. And that's why you load up on six and you bring in all six against the people you need it against.
Right.
Another thing you have is Abrupt Decay. We've talked about this. It is wonderful. It answers problems. It is one of the only instants you'll ever – I think it's the only instant even in the sideboard. Yeah, it's the only instant.
It is, yeah.
But it fixes a lot of problems.
It deals with Chalice of the Void, deals with Counterbalance, both of which are really good at just locking you out of your entire game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so I can't play one-drop spells? Well, that's all my deck. That's the whole thing, pretty much. It also stops things like Jitte or – Sword of Fire and Ice or something like that. That's just really going to wreck your entire board. So that's great. It runs as a second natural order. We'll talk more about this tomorrow. There are some different big creatures that sometimes get played. The one that is most common in sideboards is just the hardest creature to deal with in the game. Progenitus. Probably the... I don't know. We'll see.
Depends on how you define deal with, but yeah, go ahead.
So it's a 10-10.
Yeah.
With protection from everything. And I actually mean that the words on says protection from everything, period. Now it costs green, green, blue, blue, black, black, red, red, green, green.
White, white?
White, white. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Two of each color.
All the colors.
It's possibly the hardest card to cast in the entire game of Magic.
Almost certainly, I would say.
But it's a green creature, so you can natural order up for it on turn two, and a 10-10, unblockable, untargetable, protection from red, protection from white, protection from instants.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
So it is a turn two clock on against almost any deck, just because they can't block it, and you can just swing with it. It also can block just anything, if that's what you end up needing, though you...
Yep.
If you're fetching him up and playing defense, something's gone wrong, but it happens.
Yeah, it's there.
So another thing that's often in the side for big stuff is World Spine Worm.
Yep.
This is a 15-15 trample for 8, 9, 10, 11 mana. Again, I mean, you'll make 11 mana sometimes, but really you're going to natural order for this. 15-15 trample, and when it dies, you get 3 5-5 tramples. So if you break him, he just breaks into three pieces and he'll keep attacking. He's especially good against things that make you sacrifice because Progenitus, for example, one of the only ways to kill him is to make you sacrifice him.
Yep.
Well, if you sacrifice the world's...
Veil, for example. Mm-hmm,
Or Emrakul, the Aeon's Torn, who makes your sacrifice things. Well, this guy is a hard trump to Emrakul, the Aeon's Torn, because he attacks as a 15-15. All right, fine, you sacrifice this. Well, now you have 15 trample damage on your side that you get to swing on the crackback for, just on what falls off of this guy, and that's your worst-case scenario.
Right.
So that's really good. There's two cards which sometimes see mainboard play. One is Scavenging Ooze, which we've talked about. It's green.
Yep.
You can fetch it up. It hates on graveyards, gains you life, it gets really big. It's good. The other, which I like in the main more than the side, is Reclamation Sage. This is two colorless and a green for a 2-1 elf. When it enters the battlefield, destroy target artifact or enchantment. Now, we talked about how good this was with Kresali Pride Mage. We talked about how there you wanted it to be on a sacrifice effect so that you can have it be beating down in the meantime. Here, you might worry, what if I have this elf in hand and I want to play it, but there's no good target yet? There's nothing I want to kill yet? Well, Wirewood Symbiote fixes that problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So play it, beat down with it. They play an artifact you hate, play Wirewood Symbiote, bounce your Reclamation Sage, replay the Reclamation Sage.
Yeah.
So it can be fetched up with Green Sun Zenith. It can be bounced up and back off the board to kill lots of things. I have natural ordered for this thing when I really just need to get a artifact off the board that's killing me.
Yeah.
And I definitely have won games where there's a deck called Mud. Mud because all the cards in there are brown. It's artifacts and it's lands.
Well, they used to be brown a long time ago.
Yeah. So he had three – I think he had three artifacts and an enchantment, all of which were just wrecking everything I could possibly hope to do and just making life so difficult. Every single one was making it almost impossible to play. And I was able to tutor up with Green Sun Zenith for Reclamation Sage.
Yeah.
Kill one thing to allow me to play a Wirewood Symbiote, to bounce him, to play him again and kill the next thing, which allowed me to untap a land, which let me bounce him, to play him again, to kill the next thing. And I just machine gunned his entire board and it felt so good. It's a hard matchup, so it's nice when it works out like that.
Yeah.
The last couple are, let's see, we've got Pithing Needle. I don't think we've talked about that yet. Probably that not. Is a one mana artifact. When it comes into play, you name a card. Activated abilities of the card, except for mana abilities, can't be activated.
Yep.
This solves a lot of problems also. One of the most common things for this to come in against is Sensei's Divining Top.
Yep.
Because if I'm able to play this and blank your four best cards, Mr. Miracles, who I hate,
yes.
Well, that's a pretty darn good card.
It also stops Planeswalkers pretty well.
Stops Planeswalkers dead in their tracks. It stops, the Dark Depths combo that some Maverick players might be trying to run, and that is perhaps really hard to beat.
Yep. One thing your deck really cannot do is block flyers.
Yeah, I don't. We have a theory here in Elfland that the sky is a myth, and people who believe in clouds are crazy and need their heads examined.
Yeah.
The ground is real, and the sky is just a tall part of the ground.
Yeah, sure.
The last thing in the sidebar on this list is Sylvan Library, which is an enchantment. I don't think we've talked about this one before.
Yeah, it's a Maverick.
Oh, is it Maverick? Okay. Sylvan Library. It's good. It draws you lots of cards. It fixes your cards. You've got fetch lands, so you can cycle away the top of your deck.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you're in – you bring it in against the grindy matchups, the slow matchups, maybe Jund sometimes, but really like against Miracles. Lands, things like that really
not trying to pressure your life total at all, so you can just draw extra cards.
Right. Three quarters of the time, if I play Sylvan Library, the next turn, I'm paying 8 life and I'm drawing 3 cards, and I'm happy to do it. Right. Almost every time. Right. So that's the main deck, and that's a little bit on how the deck plays. I want to cut it off here because we've already gone longer than I wanted to, but you will have to come back for part 2. Where we talk more about the strategy, more about the gameplay, more about strengths and weaknesses, and more about the new hotness of Chaos Elves.
Yeah.
Hint, it doesn't have any order in it. It's chaotic.
Ooh.
Is that painful to you? Is that just a little painful?
No, I like it.
Good. Before we go, I do want to say a fond farewell. As we said, this is the last time which we will be hosted here at GatheringMagic.com, and our card of the day, our special sponsor, just for this episode, Blessed Reincarnation. Exile, target podcast. That podcast controller reveals URLs from the top of their search bar until a new URL is revealed. That player puts the RSS feed on the new URL. Shuffle your history, and then delete your browser history.
Sounds powerful.
Moving on, until next time, remember, preparation is your best legacy weapon. Thank you.
Thanks.
We will see you next time.
Yeah.
What's that website?
Legacy Weapon?
Legacy Weapon.
Yeah.
The
Legacy Weapon. Yeah.
Dot planeswalkerguide.com. That sounds right.
Yeah.
See y'all later. Bye. But I mean, people hold microphones, right? That's a thing. You can do it.
Yeah, I mean, we've recorded several podcasts where I was holding my microphone because for a long time I didn't have a desk in my room, remember?
Oh, yeah. You should have had a box. I can send you a box.
Just an empty box.
As long as I pay by pound, it'll be fine.